Hello and welcome back. I don't really have a good intro. Do you want to give it a try?
Welcome to the Hard Enduro Hoses podcast. We're the only two Canadians that know nothing about dirt bikes, and here we go. That's all I got.
I know. Okay, we're the Hard Enduro Hosers. I'm Kyle. That's Alex.
We like bikes.
Yeah. We also like talking into microphones while being in a small, intimate bedroom.
Yeah, we're really close. There's some awkward eye contact going on right now.
All the time. And it's weird. Like, it feels awkward doing this every time. Every time. I hasn't got more comfortable yet.
Yeah.
But then I go back and listen to the episode. I'm like, oh, yeah, this sounds like a regular podcast.
Yeah.
But then I have PTSD flashbacks to me and you sitting across a small table in this spare bedroom. Like, oh, yes, this is reality.
Yeah, and you listen to one of those first kind of 10, and you're like, ooh
yes. Yeah.
So, a long way in the audio quality.
We've come a long ways.
Okay, well, I think it's time for our monthly bullshit session.
It is. Whoop, whoop. I love these.
I'm curious, like, what are the pros up to?
The pros?
What are you going on? Where are they being? What are you seeing?
Actually, what are you hearing? I watched the Hispania race on Red Bull TV.
Oh, yeah.
Last weekend, I want to say.
Yeah.
During our power outage.
Yeah.
So that was the best thing to do. And it was really good. Alfredo Gomez took the big W.
Yeah. Wow, and good for him.
Yeah.
You're talking about that, you know, hardworking guy that just doesn't seem to be
absolutely
able to make.
Yeah. And I've said before in the previous episode that he's going to go to Gas, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think he might be the guy that's just going to still beat Husky when they retire Jarvis.
Yeah.
I figure they're the next Roman. Yeah. Well, I think they're just keeping Alfredo around for when Jarvis retires, and they're just not going to have a third guy again. And they'll just rock two Husky guys,
yeah,
being Bolt and Gomez.
Yeah, interesting. Right? Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a while ago, and I was like, yeah, I think that's what they're doing.
What does KTM have for pros?
Manny.
Just Manny.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's actually, speaking of Manny, I recently figured out that he listens to this podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I was watching one of Billy Bolt's vlogs. And seeing Manny's bike there, and it panned over to the shifter.
Oh, yeah.
And the shifter was siliconed on the end. I was like, oh, yeah.
Some of the free tips.
Free tips episode. It was like, someone's been listening. So obviously they, you know, the pros wouldn't get that idea from anybody except our podcast.
No, absolutely not.
No. So, yeah. So, yeah, Manuel Ettenbichler, 2020 world champ. He might be the number one fan. Is that too far? Might be too far.
We'll throw it out there.
Yeah, that's a big claim.
So, going back to Hispania, what the rest of the podium, how'd that round out?
I'm not terribly sure. I think
usually Roman does really well in there.
Yes, he did not do so well this time.
No.
It's
like his classic checkers or wreckers where he's either
on
the podium or his bike's or folded in half bottom. And his bike's caved in and
absolutely
the second half of the race.
Yeah, no, he I think he did well. I was actually super stoked for Johnny Walker. He got fifth.
Oh, yeah. That's
which was awesome. Like, he's kind of, he's getting back up to where he was.
Yeah.
Which is super good. Of course, my man Billy is on the second step of the podium there. So he took second, and then Manny took third.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty consistent.
Pretty consistent.
No big upsets in there.
No, exactly. And Alfredo's just a strong box that just.
Yeah, he's a tough guy.
Yeah, and he just goes full bore all the time.
Does it still have that awkward lake section where they're like...
It does. And actually, they had a camera on a boat, so you could see like the whole side of the shore, and it was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very good, which is exciting. I don't know. I kind of want to race that race.
Yeah. Like, it looks like a lot packed into a small area.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you're going to get dummied by all the people that are good and can lap you four times in
yeah.
two and a half hours or whenever the time limit is.
Yeah. There's that hill off like the cobblestone-ish beach that just looks crazy.
Yeah.
Where
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like there's the...
It'd be one thing to do it. It'd be another thing to do it with people on it.
And for sure. And especially if they're taking all the good lines or what have you.
Just trying to get a run at it.
Yeah. Wow. We've got a room full of dogs smashing everything.
Yeah, we do.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So that was the race. It was worth watching. I really like having full races to watch.
Yeah.
In North America here, it seems like there's not a whole lot of coverage for all the races. So I get very excited when there's a full race to watch and not just a recap or highlights. It's essentially just, I think it's Hispania and Erzberg are the only ones.
Yeah.
And Getz and Rodeo.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Romaniacs, like, it just seems like the coverage is too broken up. Like, even you get the day by day, but even then, like, it's so remote that they just can't have cameras everywhere.
For sure. Yeah, that's part of the Hispania. Yeah. When it's 6 hour days for 4 days, it's there's no way that you could cover all of that. And it's not a loop.
Like no.
It's going somewhere.
No, that's like Erzberg where you're doing a loop around all packed into a mine. Like it's
You can like pre-position people with cameras and have helicopters and all that good stuff and drones. And they even do helicopters anymore for cameras?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it just like drones?
Yeah, they had last time at Erzberg way back 2018, they had a helicopter with a giant ball under it. But I guess that was 3 years ago.
Yeah, drones have come a long ways. I know. And I guess you have those random incidents where the drones hit
the riders.
Like one ran into Billy last year, I think it was.
Hit by a drone.
Yeah, just sent a big double or something and the drone just ran into the side of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I'd be pretty concerned if I was the helicopter pilot about smashing drones
at these. For sure. Well, I guess you'd be a fair bit higher.
They're pretty like...
They go way up there for the big pan shots.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know. I don't know anything about drones, and I don't terribly care all that much, to be honest.
Yeah.
It is good, but I don't know.
So what else we got going on in the dirt world?
I don't know. There's not a whole bunch going on these days. Doesn't seem like. The AMA Endurocross is happening. I'm sure I've mentioned that because I love Endurocross.
Yeah.
But that's happening.
So
our man Tristan Hart is doing well.
Yeah.
I think he's in third overall right now.
Yeah. Canada.
And Spencer Wilton is doing fairly well. He's another Alberta boy that rides with Tristan.
Yeah.
And Colton Haker, of course, is doing very well in winning because your man, Cody Webb, isn't racing.
Yeah.
Broken wrist. That was a tragic crash.
Yeah. Just like fell over in a rock garden, smashed by.
Yeah. But he fell like 6 feet.
Yeah.
Like I think he was trying to do a big old splatter on a rock and then too far backwards and fell down.
Yeah.
And bumped his arm.
Yeah. I just saw the picture of his bike laying in a boulder field on its side.
Oh, yeah. No, it was like, it was a big send. And he just went over backwards. He fell a long ways.
What's Hacker even riding now?
The Husky.
Oh yeah, they're still.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, he because Billy and Alfredo had to race Haker's bikes in Tennessee Knockout because their bikes didn't show up.
Yeah, yeah, you were saying that.
Yeah, so he had to. They raced Haker's bikes. Yeah.
Huh.
Which and I is would,
he still classified as a factory rider?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think he... Okay. Yeah.
I thought he was a realtor now.
A realtor?
Yeah.
Like selling houses?
Yeah, he sells houses.
Oh. Oh, he... Yeah. Wow. He went... Could you imagine buying a house from Colton Haker? He'd be like, yeah, you know, this job's great, but... Still got to represent the red plate on the Husky. He'd tell you all about his life.
Wonder if he has red plates on his truck.
Yeah, probably. Seems like that type of guy. Look at me, I've won. Yeah, so he's doing well. Fucking loving Darryl Cross. I just wish that the coverage was better. It's on Flow Racing app right now.
Yeah.
But you have to buy a yearly subscription for 1 month of racing, which is very, very sad. I know.
That's how they get you.
$150 USD.
What?
Yeah.
For a month?
Essentially. Because you have to, they say, oh, it's $12.50 a month. But then they charge you the yearly subscription and only the yearly subscription. And it's just like the other racing is just like brutal America racing.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking NASCAR and stuff. I don't even think actually...
Carburetor.
Yeah, I could be wrong. Like, it'd be like rat rods and stuff, I think. Like, I don't even think that NASCAR is on there. They're too big of a deal. Yeah. Yeah, we got... The snow is creeping down the mountain here.
Yeah, it looks like it's that frozen, kind of slippery... Like,
oh, I really wanted to break into that Frozen song, but I couldn't remember it off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. Where your tires are just, they're so cold that they're hard, and then
yeah,
you have that thin layer of frost on everything, so it just spin fest and...
Yeah, I know.
It's pretty frugal.
I know. I don't know how much
frost
more riding we're going to have around here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like the snow is creeping down the old Hudson Bay Mountain.
Yeah, and like the frost line is now just above town. So
yeah. Yeah, no, I might get snowed out here within the next few weeks. Yeah. Have to start driving a terrace again.
So, one of a viewer submitted topic asking about winterizing bikes. So, we're getting talking about snowed out.
Yeah. I don't... So, for me personally, I don't do anything in winter. So, winter is my time to fix my bike.
Yeah.
So, it comes all the way apart.
Yeah.
I do fork oil and tranny oil and all the bearings and...
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything left.
Yeah.
Clean everything.
For me, it was a great inspection time where it was all the things that you kind of were like, oh, that's probably getting end of life.
Yeah. Start and like, eh, that'll be fine till winter.
Like, put it up on the stand, give the wheels a shake, see how your wheel bearings are.
Yeah.
Pull your swing arm bearings out, grease them. I don't know, my Sherco bearings, when I started actually taking them out and greasing them and putting them back in, they just started lasting.
like your linkage bearings.
Yeah, my linkage bearings.
I did that too, actually, with my Husky.
That seems
greased them twice, and I never replaced them, actually, in 180 hours.
Yeah, even like my inner race inserts all look good. Like they were a little bit flat colored, but there was no wear or anything. I mean, when I did them on my KTM, where I just never looked at them until they were a problem, they were like pitted and wrecked.
Yeah. It's crazy that it makes that much of a difference, actually. Yeah. And I think that's why tons of people tell you to grease them better right when you buy a brand new bike.
Yeah.
Because I think that really extends the life of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't know because I haven't had the pleasant experience of buying a brand new bike.
That new bike smell.
Oh, my goodness. I just live vicariously through. Does anybody buy new bikes around here? I guess Jacob did.
I did. 500 was new.
Oh, 500 was new. Oh, yeah.
It was so fresh.
It was so new. So expensive. And yeah. No, that's true. That's true. It's been a while, though. 2016?
16, yeah.
Is your
last year 500? The body style. 6 days.
Yeah.
Fancy white.
It's a very nice bike. Mm-hmm. Which is the only bike you have right now.
Yeah, the only off-road bike.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting.
Don't discount the fleet.
I can't. Yeah. It's because it's on the other side of Canada, the rest of the fleet, which you really need to get that sexy Goldwing over here.
Yeah, I do.
I love that it's like...
The thought crossed my mind of packing it back.
Yeah. And it looks like a Ducks Unlimited advertisement across the side of it.
Hand-painted murals on the side from Bike Week.
Well, there's like
Daytona Bike Week of like 83 or something. It's got hand-painted on there.
There's like willows and mallard ducks just like...
Yeah, bulrushes. Bulrushes and cattails. Ducks flying and nice.
It is a majestic shroud, that is for sure.
Yeah.
And the Aprilia.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever talked about the wing.
Have you seen those Des Honduras? The guys like
the country?
No. The guys riding the Goldwings, hitting like MX jumps. We'll bring this back to dirt bike related here. You guys jumping gold wings.
Oh, yeah.
In like the leopard print.
Yeah, I have seen snippets. I've
seen it, yeah. It's pretty ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, they're tough bikes, though. I mean, they take it.
But moderately take it.
Yeah. I think the joke, I'm with you. I think the joke's getting a little old where it's like, okay, yeah, we've seen it. Yeah, we've seen you jump in a bike with a trailer.
Yeah.
That, yeah, you got the views on the initial shock factor and
it's played out. It's like Poltara's on his Tenere 700.
Yeah.
It's like, we get it. You can do trial stuff on your adventure bike.
Yeah. Nobody else can.
It's time to get back to real racing.
Yep.
Except for Tony Boo on a bigger bike that does better stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm really sad that Paul doesn't race.
I'd really like to see Tony race. Speaking of people who should race.
Enduro bike?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Do you think he'd beat Jarvis? Could he?
Probably.
Could he get the MX side, the speed? Because he's a better trials rider. We can say that undisputedly.
Undisputed, yeah.
He's like 20 world championships straight.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy doesn't even need a front wheel on his trials bike anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he could. Really, it's like a guy that's good on a motorbike. The speed just comes.
Yeah, that give deep him, of an understanding on traction.
Yeah. Give him 2 months on a motocross track and let him go on the Enduro series. How old is he?
He's getting older.
Is he getting up there?
Yeah, he's not Jarvis status, but...
But he's not like 30 and still a spring chicken?
No.
I guess you can if you've got 20 world championships.
Late 30s. I don't know. I'll have to do a little...
Yeah, but no, that's an interesting query that you have there. I think even if he had like one season where he just... rode all the FIM hard enduro series.
Yeah.
That would be very exciting. Just seeing how he stacks up. So I think he could do very well, especially if he got on something like...
He's 34.
There you go.
He's 2 years older than me. He's about to turn 35, actually, on the 17th, October 17th. Happy birthday, Tony Boo.
Oh, actually, speaking of happy birthdays, my wife Katie turned 29 today.
Oh!
Yeah. So, happy birthday, Katie.
Yeah.
She doesn't listen to our episodes, so she doesn't care about me or the things I'm doing with my life and podcasting, but that's okay.
That's why we have viewers. Right?
That's why Take we care. Have all you guys, so I don't need my wife.
So you can sit here and stare intimately into my eyes instead of hers.
So,
makes it even more awkward to be in a small room with
you. There can be... One white middle-aged man staring into the eyes of another white middle-aged man. I guess we're not middle-aged.
I don't know. How long do you plan on living? Longer than me, I guess.
It's like I'm 30. Like I hope I'm not middle-aged just yet. I'd like to see 85.
What would Boo ride? Like throw? Sorry.
No. I was going to talk about how bad my knees are and that I don't think they're going to make it to 85. But anyways. Yeah,
you'll be a walker for sure.
See, I would go something like a Sherco.
Yeah.
Because that's the most trials-y enduro bike, I would argue.
I was thinking like 250 RX.
The fuck is that?
A CRF 250
Honda?
RX. Yeah. He's Honda head to toe. It'd be a Repsol edition. Oh. It'd have the orange, the white, the red. It would look good.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd be a fan of it. That's how Honda will get a hydraulic clutch.
Oh my goodness.
If they put Tony Boo
into Enduro wide open.
RX 250, because that 450, nobody wants to get slapped by that. It's so aggressive.
So you want Tony in his sausage suit. On a 250 RX.
Yeah, he'd be like a little Danny Pedrosa out there because I think he's a pretty small guy.
Yeah. Yeah, but what does he ride? Is his trials bike a Honda?
Yeah, he rides for Honda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is all coming together. I thought he was like a beta
factory
or something.
Honda Repsol trials rider. And then all his big bike stuff he does on an Africa Twin, a Repsol edition twin.
I knew he was doing the Africa Twin.
Yeah. Yeah, he's stuff, a Honda guy. I'm sure they pay him a ton of money.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I bet they pay him.
And he's on a four-stroke
trials bike. I didn't even know the Honda made trials bikes.
Really?
That's kind of random, isn't
it? They're Montesa Codas. So they're owned by Honda, but they're not really Hondas.
Okay. So they're allowed to be cool while being owned by Honda? Is that what you're telling me?
Here comes the hate shots from the fired. Readers. Yeah.
Sorry. There's nothing.
We have a Team Honda here that...
Yeah.
They're Team Honda.
Yeah.
So we give them a hard time, and it rolls through.
It does roll through.
I'm not trying to be the...
No, Hondas are great. If you want them owners. Overweight, underpowered, and extremely reliable.
They are extremely reliable.
Yeah. And those other two things.
We just talked about how aggressive the 450 is.
It's fucking aggressive. This is true.
So we can't even say they're underpowered.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that 250 RX, though, that is, I will say, that is like a pretty good option, I think.
Yeah.
You rode Kaylee's, right?
Yeah, I did.
I haven't had the opportunity yet.
It's good. I could live with that bike.
You rallied it in a field for a little while on kind of a switchback grass track type situation.
Yeah, it was a grass track with a couple of good mounds and stuff. Yeah. And it felt really composed. I also rallied around the airstrip.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Were you lightning fast on it?
I don't remember. I don't think I had the clock going, but it was nimble. Like it was definitely good. Supportive.
Yeah.
Like the stiffer.
For sure.
Like cross country setup suspension, which on the airstrip is.
Which is perfect. Fine.
Like it's a smoother flat track. It's what we kind of talk about for our suspension test track where it's really tight switchbacks on like flat, loose berm corners.
Yeah.
With the odd log and stuff in there. Pretty two-dimensional.
And now there's like, what is it? The braking or the accelerating whoops and stuff getting smashed in
whoops,
there.
Yeah,
it's a doozy. I'm like smashing skid plate coming off some of those sometimes.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that says more about my KTM than the Honda. But No, that's cool. I really like to ride one. So let's bring it back to the winter prep. What do you do for winter prep?
So typically that's where I check my pads. And if they're like sub 50%, I just throw new pads in, check my rotors. Before I take my wheels off, just check my bearings for play on the rim side to side. And if it's kind of a little clunky, then I'll pull them out and swap them.
Oh, I want to bring it back real quick just for just, 2 seconds to the
before.
Rear wheel bearings. I bought 4 of them on Amazon for $16.
Yeah.
And they usually last me 40 hours. So that's like a season's worth of bearings for 40 hours.
Yeah.
The part number is P60052RSJ. And that is, part number for rear wheel bearings for KTM, Husky, whatever. And the front ones as well on the 16 and older bikes.
Okay, yeah. And it's 2 in the rear? 3 in the rear.
2 in the rear. Yeah. So when I get bearings, I just get the cheap ones.
Yeah.
And like I don't buy those kits anymore.
Yeah.
From Fort Nine or whatever that comes with the seals and the whole works because the seals are fine.
Yeah. I don't seem to have a problem with the seals and they're double sealed rollers anyway. I do the Napa and get the SKF ones.
That's what I have been getting, but those are like $12 each.
Yeah.
$15 each, I think, but something in there. And it's like, well, I mean, they do last me 40 hours, like almost to the hour, which is fine. But if I can get 16 and get 80 hours, that's the ticket. That's a good hour per cost ratio, I figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As long as they last 40 hours, we're gonna find out.
And then battery comes out and. I usually start somewhere warm. Like I don't throw it on the floor in the garage. It usually, if my heat's on in the garage, it'll stay out there. But otherwise, I usually throw it in my crawl space.
Yeah, I think that's worth doing.
In my house, just keep it cozy.
If you're not gonna,
you don't risk freezing it if it
totally
discharges on its own and the voltage drops off.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Air filters, they both come out and both get cleaned. I own two, and we talk about having the two. Everyone living the dream, right? Of, oh, I wash one while the other one's on the bike, and then nobody does, and then you have two dirty air filters, so you clean both at once. Winter is the time to clean them both at once. Yeah. And wash out the air box, like take it off. I just brake clean mine out. I know some people pressure wash them off the bike, but
yeah,
especially with the Sherco, because the battery's underneath there, it's a really big air box. So a lot of dirt kind of comes in and falls to the bottom around the battery.
Oh yeah, it totally would.
Yeah. So once the air filter's out and, yeah, like then kind of pulling that out and cleaning all that, washing all the gunk out of the bottom. Definitely. It's got a drain hole.
I've thought about buying one of those, like the air filter caps or whatever, to just cover that. So you can pressure wash
in there.
Yeah. I thought about doing that. But I don't know. I don't know.
It didn't seem... I get it. If you're like race team and stuff, they're great. I just find that for me, a season's worth of kind of dust in there in the winter, wash it out, clean, start fresh again. And it's not...
Yeah, a guy can...
It's not overwhelming.
No, that's very true. You can pretty much just get in there with a rag and whatever and some brake clean and call it a day.
Yeah. And then...
fresh tires. I do fresh tires every season. Mm-hmm. Like every winter, just to start fresh. That's just personal preference, because I usually get...
Yeah.
I'm usually one front tire season and then two rears, three rears.
Yeah. Check my coolant level. Yeah. Rarely change it.
Yeah, you run regular green coolant too,
right? Yeah, I just run a 50-50 green mix.
Yeah.
And
same here, nothing fancy. Nothing
crazy.
I feel like I drain my coolant too often to have fancy coolant.
Yeah.
I don't know why I drain my coolant so much, but I seem to drain it a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've got a fan, so we don't really need the... Ooh, I do have a high pressure cap though.
Yeah.
That Jacob put on there.
The last winter I did my power valve. I pulled it out and cleaned it. I don't think this is like an everybody every winter type thing. The bike just was at 200 hours and... I knew that the balls were kind of wearing, it's a two-stage guillotine, and the balls that lock the two stages together were kind of sticking a bit. So I bought a new part there. I'd brushed it previously.
Yep. I think that's something that a lot of people don't think of cleaning is the power valve.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of work on the KTM.
Is it to pull the actual guillotine out and scrub in there?
Yeah. Well, it's just a whole...
Is it?
It's like a... rotating shutter.
Okay, yeah.
Type deal, and there's linkages and so many different gears. And
it's tough when it's on the bike because you don't want to be pulling that out and knocking hunks of carbon off down into your cylinder where they're just going to scratch up the side of your piston or something. For sure.
And I think a guy pretty much has to pull the cylinder off the bike to do it half-assed properly. So it's right in the front there, obviously. Yeah. But yeah. But I mean, I don't get too carried away with winter prep.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Honestly,
fuel-wise,
I usually drain my fuel. I usually put it back in a jerry can for no apparent reason.
Yeah, I just run it till it's low, till there's like nothing left in the bike. Like I stop buying fuel more than 5 liters at a time towards the end of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
And then kind of when it's the last ride, I'm like, well, I know I got one or two rides left. And I run it down till there's like nothing left and then...
Then call it a day. Call it a season.
When I start next year, I just fill it up with, just dilute that little bit left with fresh stuff and away I go. I think with the two strokes, the oil that you add, if you're pre-mixing, works as a pretty good stabilizer and helps kind of protect your bronze parts. But on the four stroke bikes and stuff, obviously you don't get the benefits of that.
Oh, I never even thought of that. So
if you want to throw some fuel stabilizer in it, it's definitely worth it.
There's
mix
also
a little in your tank, stir it up, and then run it so that it actually makes it through to your injector.
Yeah, I'm ignoring you so much or interrupting you so much today. I'm sorry. There is a Fort 9 YouTube video on stabilizer, actually, and they test a whole boatload of fuel stabilizers and winterizers and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that was interesting, and it's probably worth a watch for people.
Yeah.
And I think 94 octane actually really helps with the water in the fuel.
Yeah, because it's non-ethanol.
Yeah, absolutely. So that might be something to consider if you're one of those people that just run 91 octane.
Yeah.
And that might be worth running some 94 for the last 10 liters or so.
Tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
That's a good time to check your caliper or your rotor wear too, just to see if you got any weird grooves, but
yeah, I always get like, there's always I find there's on the peaks, there's always like grooves.
Yeah. Yeah. The tips. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if those are worth like grinding off or probably just leaving.
They're hardened steel. Like, I just leave them.
Do you ever replace your rotors?
I haven't yet. We had the one on your 250, your YZ, that rear, that was like, wow, wore like a millimeter aside.
Yeah, that was
the only rotor I think I've ever replaced. The rear ones, I'd go to a more solid mud style rotor. My KTM came with one, the Sherco didn't.
Yeah, I think I'd go full solid.
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know. My fear is warping, that just having the thinner one lets it kind of flex a little more. I don't know. I'm not afraid of the solid ones.
No, do you think the air holes make that much of a difference?
I see it as more of a mud stripping hole.
Pardon me. Wowzers.
Yeah, just a place for any contaminants on your back. Yeah.
That got dark quickly.
But yeah. there's specs for rotor wear. There's specs for rotor wear. Measure your rotors.
Yeah.
I think calipers are something that are worth having.
Oh, that gets me. Oh, my goodness. Whew. Pull yourself together, Kyle. My goodness, man. Yeah. No, I think I'm getting down there to replace my rotor, and I'm pretty sure. Oh, this is awful. I will put a solid rotor on there because I do think it'll make a difference, and it'll make the rear brake less touchy.
Yeah, and that's I don't know. I'm not. I if it makes the rear rotor, the rear
rear brake.
I like having to stand on my rear brake a little bit more. Because yeah. I think we've talked about it previously.
I lock it up a lot.
That I dangle my foot on the pedal just when I'm going through a lot of corners and stuff. I like to feel a little bit of pressure on there, and I kind of keep my foot on it.
Yeah.
So that I'm there and I'm never like looking for it in that mad scramble. And not having, sometimes, you know, you catch that little bump that kind of knocks you a little forward or something, and you stand on your rear brake, and having something that's not as sensitive would definitely, I see a plus to that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just pretty stabby with it, I find.
Yeah.
Like, I've been using it a whole lot more this year, and I really see the value in having good rear brake finesse.
Yeah.
But I do find that I get pretty aggressive on it.
Nothing.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. And I use it lots, but I find myself like getting into it and then it locks up usually every time.
Yeah.
Or just about. But yeah, no, that's something that I've been thinking a lot about. Do you think handlebars makes any difference? I've been looking at Astra Off-Road handlebars.
Yeah, the guy who got my bike, we were just talking about it, and I was just discussing this to him, that when you talk about sweep and things like that and your bar position when it's rolled forward and backwards,
yeah,
as well as your position on your clamp. Mounts on your clamps on the top tree, where your hands actually connect to the bars relative to the axis that you steer around, like your headset.
Yep.
That point will affect the maneuverability. So you can go more sweep and roll them forward a little bit, but basically where your hands actually grab, like let's say the center of your grip, if that's rolled ahead, whether it's with less sweep or rolling the bar of that pivot point, your bike's going to be a lot more twitchy when you're accelerating, but a little bit more stable when you're slowing down. Because when you're slowing down, you're pushing. It's almost self-aligning where you're applying force on the other side of the pivot so that it wants to stay straight.
Yeah.
But when you're accelerating, you're pulling ahead of the pivot, and that makes it unstable where it wants to hunt.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Trying to run that point, if you can imagine a line coming straight up your steer tube and then having where your handlebars in the middle of the grip, where you generally grip the firmest, having that point on that plane. If that makes sense.
Oh, that does make sense, because then that's the ideal acceleration to deceleration.
Yeah, I would describe that as balanced. And if you're, I think a bike that is a little bit more twitchy when you're accelerating and a little bit more stable on braking, I enjoy that feeling a little bit more. Because when I'm braking, generally, that's when, you know, your front tire on the verge of locking up. And you really don't want that darting around on you.
Absolutely.
When you're braking hard. So for me, that's having the bars rolled just a little bit forward of that pivot. So that when I'm braking hard, my front end's not diving. I'm not fighting and trying to stay on top of the bike. And when I'm accelerating, usually, I mean, you're in kind of a mad scramble anyway. So your front tire's light.
It's light. I'd like argue you're almost more focused if you're giving her the juice and you're you're obviously looking ahead. You're on top of the game.
Yeah.
You're not just being lazy and grabbing the brake or something. And
yeah. And if your bars are, if that point is a little bit ahead, then it's also a little bit more nimble when you're not on the power. Like when you're just kind of maintaining speed, it's a little bit more nimble. Yeah. So when you come to stumps and stuff like that, but you're in a neutral body position, it's pretty duck and weave.
Yeah, you can navigate a little bit better.
Yeah, and then rolling back to bars, that's where I think when you start looking at sweep forwards and backwards and a little bit up, because it kind of affects it, but that hand position, you can get that hand angle that kind of unloads your wrists or that straighter bar if that's what you're into. But adjusting your roll to kind of maintain those points, I think, is the important part.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that's the most important part of your feel. The rest of it's kind of unloading your wrists in your sweep. But the how the bike actually reacts to the bars is more on where you
roll. Is more position
than
the actual bar. That's interesting.
Yeah. So if you want more kind of upward sweep, rather than backward sweep, you could move your clamps back on the top triple tree and then roll your bars forward. And that would kind of keep you on that plane. Or if you want them to be flatter and sweep back more, then you can move your clamps forward and roll the bars down.
Interesting. So I don't know if you've had a look at those Astra off-road bars.
Yeah.
So they're like, essentially, they're just flat. They're low sweep, low rise bars, and like very low rise being like 30 mil rise type thing. And I like the idea of them. I don't have any experience with riding them, but I do like the idea of them. And I think they might be worth trying. Just getting into that like you were saying with your wrist position and stuff. But I'm not sure if that's going to make a big difference when it comes to like actual feel or not. But that's interesting with the pivot though, and where you're the pivot point and where your hands are on the bars. I definitely need to go look at my bike.
With rise, like I've gone to higher rise bars like the CR High and then kind of come back to like a factory bar. I just find that you start to almost be pulling too high on the bike, so when you accelerate,
it wants to come up.
It wants to come up more. And it makes like pivot turns and stuff easier. And on steeper stuff, the bar just seems to be a little bit too high.
Yeah, for sure.
And like it gets you a little bit more back over the bike too, which gets that front tire a little lighter.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I was kind of intrigued by those low rise bars.
Yeah.
And because I don't think high rise bars are for me. And I think that's I'm going to look at getting some of them Astros or the Johnny Walker bar that he always runs is the McGrath.
Yeah.
The Renthal 821 fat bar McGrath short.
I thought he was a 997.
He's a 999 guy.
Yeah, 999. That's what it
is. Yeah. So he went to Beta, and he's buying his own parts.
Yeah.
He is just running the regular fat bar. Now, instead of
the twin wall,
with the cross brace, so he doesn't have to take off that bar and put a different one on when he's running Romaniacs with GPSs and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because he has to run a fat bar with Romaniacs or any other navigational GPS one.
Yeah.
So he decided to just run the regular fat bar all the time.
Get used to it. Huh?
Yeah. And it's the same. He said it's the same bend and everything. It's just fat bar versus the twin wall with the crossbar on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, that is, I did some handlebar looking. I don't know. How far are we getting into this? We're getting pretty deep. We can probably go back. And, but the twin wall bars with the cross brace are the stiffest bars you can get.
Yeah.
And then the regular fat bar has more flex than that. And then the 7/8 bar with the crossbar is the softest. Yeah. So that's something that I found out recently while I was researching handlebars.
So I went between the fat bar and the twin wall, and I didn't really notice it.
No.
No. I mean,
maybe it's for those 1%ers that are like good and notice those things.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't bend them. So there's that. I mean, they may be a little tougher.
But this is true. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know if it's the answer. I don't know if it's worth $180 or so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like it. Our listeners can tell us, though.
Yeah. What are you guys running for bars? What do you like? What have you tried? Anybody try those flex bars, the composite? I've been curious about them, but
yeah,
I'm worried about not getting the feedback that I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't know if I'm sold on them. And because I've got my fancy counterbalance bike, I don't care about flex bars. yeah, let us know what you guys are running for handlebars, actually. That would be super interesting and helpful. Yeah, whether it's flex bars, fat bars, even specific models. I love specific models. So,
Bends.
Or even, let me know how the Astra off-road bars are.
And winter tips. Throw in winter tips. What did we miss?
Definitely.
And generally, it's kind of almost a strip down where you, like...
For me, it is. Anyways.
Pull the reeds out and check them, see if they're chipped or anything. It's just, it's a good... You can take your time, pull some stuff apart, have a look deeper in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But if you're one of those people that just put it away, let us know what you do. And at Hardendura Hosers Instagram.
Yeah. HardenduraHosers.com. And you can leave us a voice message. It'll send you to our Anchor FM. There's just a little thing there that says leave voice message. I don't believe you have to sign in or anything like that. You can just click leave voice message. It asks you for your name and record it straight on your phone. Good to go. We'll get it.
Oh, it's so simple. How can you not do it?
Mm-hmm. And be on the show.
Yeah, great. Alrighty. Well, that's a wrap on our October bullshit session.
Yeah.
So we will see you guys in the next one.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanks Canadian Taking Giving.
Oh.
Uh-oh.